Brendan.
Hey, Alan.
Yay, another Not a Thing podcast. We're going strong. It's summer. Everything is firing on all cylinders, all that kind of good stuff.
I don't know if I'm firing on all cylinders. I'm feeling kind of out of it this week. A little sleepy. But you know, the podcast is doing great.
Yeah. Yes, collectively we are fine. I did hear, I'm throwing you a bit of a curveball here, but I did hear a little news blurb on the way in today that I guess I want to say it's South America, there's a species of penguin that the locals had, they do kind of a migration kind of thing during this time of year, so there's this they all kind of come on land and kind of hang out for a little while and then go, and a lot of the locals had been like, or not locals, the tourists had, that they had been known for that, and they'd come by and check them out and take pictures, and it was enough that it was disturbing their ecosystem enough that they'd become endangered, and so the locals kind of fought to keep the penguins alive. So I wasn't sure what your take on that would be.
Well, South America sucks. I'm kidding. South America's, you know, not terrible. way to go off book, Alan. We spent hours meticulously scripting this podcast, and you throw not only a curveball, but a penguin-flavored curveball. I see how this one's going to be.
Penguin flavor.
That's a conflicting issue for me, because as much as I dislike penguins, I think even more so I dislike people messing with animals' natural habitats, even if those animals happen to be raging assholes. I still defend their right to, you know, live unharassed.
Especially by tourists, right? I mean, that's the worst.
Yeah. Find the one thing I hate more than penguins, tourists.
Excellent. Well, also in a somewhat touristy kind of venue, this week and weekend, actually I guess it's next week and weekend, is both the Black Hat Conference and DEF CON are both in Las Vegas this coming week and weekend. And I'm still not cool enough to go to either of those things. One day it would be really cool. It just sounds fun. I mean, maybe not if you're not prepared to be, you know, potentially digitally messed with or whatever. I mean, one of the things it's kind of famous for are the pranks that people play. For example, the DEF CON conference, it's versus Black Hat. Black Hat's kind of, it almost has corporate sponsors kind of as it goes in, because they work a lot with computer security teams at various companies like Cisco or McAfee or whatever. But the DEF CON conference is much more like straight up hackers who don't want their identities revealed. And so it's actually all in cash, or potentially Bitcoin, I guess, just a non-identifiable currency. So one of the hacks that someone did, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago, was they hacked the nearest ATM machine, so they could like expose all the people that were frantically changing their stuff to cash because they had to pay cash at all of the DEF CON events. So stuff like that. That's probably wouldn't miss the bad parts.
No. And that's DEF CON, not to be confused with DEF CONity Jam. That's a totally different thing.
You're right. It is good to make that distinction.
I think we'd have better luck getting into that. Which is not to be confused with DEF Comedy Jam, which is totally different.
Well,
DEF CONity Jam's not a real thing.
Yeah.
But it could be. We could do it. Start our own conference.
Well, apparently, there might be a market for that, because I guess this year, because of all the stuff with the NSA and Snowden and all that kind of stuff. The feds, who were, you know, just federal agents in general, were not specifically, or they were, you know, more than even tolerated. They were invited to speak at events at DEF CON. But this year, some of the organizers wrote a blog post that says, it would be maybe good to take a break this year. I think the phrise time out was used. But, you know, I guess just in light of the openness of the conference and how the free sharing of information, I guess the organizers of DEF CON were like, maybe if all the parties were a little more free about their sharing of information, it would make more sense. And I agree with that. I mean, they can't outright ban them because they probably can't even tell who's a spy or not. Or at least I would hope not. I mean, if the NSA and government agencies are trying so hard to, you know, not be noticed, I would hope that they would have done a good enough job that they could sneak into DEF CON if they wanted to.
You would think so.
Yeah.
It's kind of a do not pass go, do not collect $200.
Right.
Just collect everybody's data.
Yeah. But,
the best community chest.
So I was looking at the conference topics at Black Hat and DEF CON, and it's pretty cool. I think we're going to have to start a fund for the Not a Thing podcast to go to that.
Okay.
Although, like, Comic-Con's also that weekend, so whatever.
that's a tough choice.
Actually, is Comic-Con this weekend?
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Oh, okay, weekend. Then we have time to go to both. Perfect.
Oh, sweet. Perfect. Let me just go try and buy a ticket to Comic-Con the week of the event.
Well, I'll see you
there. Let's get a hotel, no problem.
Yeah, the ridiculousness of trying to get into Comic-Con, I think, is not a thing. I do like the idea of Comic-Con. I have been, but it was so many years ago. It was between the first and second season of Heroes, if that has anything, you know.
Oh, so when Heroes was at its height.
Yes.
But then one season, they were like, wow, this show's great. And then they continued to make the show, and it's all downhill from there.
They could have done a little more work on it, but yeah. The second, third, and I think fourth seasons of Heroes, not a thing. Just watch that first season, and then, in fact, watch the first season, and then when they flip to the one where the ending for Hero, stop watching. I don't think I'm spoiling anything by putting that out there.
Even if you are, if you haven't watched Heroes by this point, then that's on you. The statute of limitations is up.
Well, you know, I know I watched a lot of TV when I was less than fully employed, shall we say.
You were self-employed.
I watched almost all of Stargate.
Stargate SG-1.
Yes, yes. And thanks to you for the majority of it, in fact.
Yeah.
It was rad.
It was a good time.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if the amount of TV I watched was a factor in my getting employed again. There was a study out last week about... there's in the UK, they did kind of a survey... But they made, I think they also seeded candidates to job interviews, where the only difference in the resumes was the very last job that they had was either as a self-employed consultant or working at a corporation, and it was some numbers, statistically significant number, were like, yeah, we want you to have worked at a corporation and not been self-employed. And I find that kind of a bummer because one of my career pieces was being self-employed, and I liked it a lot. But I can kind of see why companies wouldn't like that, because it makes the person potentially not a team player, or not used to having a boss, or otherwise kind of more difficult. But I don't know. I see the qualities of a person who's self-employed as outranking those, but maybe it's just me and my field.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind is this is a European study, and I would venture to guess that in America, there's different outlook.
Oh, sure. Because
there is such a priority placed on, like, oh, it's small business. Oh, it's self-starters.
Yep.
It's a very American thing. Not to say that corporate America is not. I'm sure there's a lot of that still. But I would expect the numbers to be slightly different.
That's a really good point, right? The American ingenuity, stick-to-itiveness, or whatever they're calling it these days.
Yeah. That being said, when I was on the hiring side of the table, I definitely get working in a corporate environment for a corporate business. I would look at people who had worked in those environments before, because there is a certain mentality that you and skill set that you need to be able to, you know, get along with everybody.
That's true. It's true. I think for me, the jobs that I guess I had been related to hire for were always kind of in the trenches. It's dirty. You got to do all this work. And so having people that are used to doing kind of a lot of work, kind of on the fringes of their job descriptions was something that worked out. Although what's really interesting now that I think about it is my time spent consulting probably made me less of a person that would want to do things that are on the fringes of my job description. So I guess there is some truth to it. Self-discovery is a thing on the Not a Thing podcast.
Whoa.
And on to maybe slightly less depressing thought in a different direction.
More depressing.
Yeah, there was a really cool article in, I want to say, The Atlantic, which I'm becoming more of a fan of for stuff for the podcast, kind of longer format stories. So this one was about working in Antarctica. I guess you can essentially, almost anyone, it sounds like, can sign up to be a research scientist or assist in kind of a research science kind of thing. So this came from some guy who was supposedly, you know, working in Silicon Valley, and he's like, I got to get away from this. I really need the furthest thing away from here. What's that? Okay, let's go to Antarctica. And he became a research scientist. And the crazy
thing... / alcoholic.
Yeah, the crazy thing is that, you know, when you're there, it is the, you know, southernmost point of the globe, and, you know, given how the Earth tilts and all that kind of stuff, you essentially are in mostly darkness or barely twilight for 6 months out of the year as everything works out. And so it kind of plays upon that seasonal affective disorder kind of thing, which I guess people get in the northern hemisphere just during winter, because there are less hours of daylight. But, you know, at the southernmost pole, it's like, yeah, there's like no hours of daylight essentially for months on end. And so the article was like, yeah, people want a lot of provisions and things to occupy them, and mostly booze. It seemed like
a lot of booze.
Everyone was talking about, oh, I wish I had had more booze.
Would you do that?
I think if it were less than 6 months, it might be interesting to do just kind of as a meditative exercise. But that's a long time. It's just a really long time. And it's not like it's a long time and you can, you know, like if right now I wanted to be kind of solitary, I could kind of do that, you know, here a little bit. I mean, my wife might not be so happy about it, but you know, you can kind of escape every once in a while, or you know that the door to, you know, human contact or whatever would be a lot closer. When you're in Antarctica, you literally cannot leave because the fuel will freeze in the tanks. It was that sounded like way more than I was expecting, I guess. But I would think that kind of thing would be better training for the astronaut program than the biosphere kind of stuff. Right, I mean, completely solitary. Everyone is in everyone's business. It's dark. You can't go outside except for, unless you gotta wear this like crazy suit. You know, it seems like that would be like good training for astronauts.
Well, I want to be an astronaut, so maybe I should do that. Be a really remote podcast.
Let me just start with the drinking part.
I've been working on that for years, training up my abilities.
Yeah, it would be. I think it would be interesting to do. I mean, I would want to start small, maybe, like a week of, you know, a lot of isolation or something. I don't know if I could just throw in for 6 months. That's a pretty crazy commitment.
Or a year.
Yeah. Yeah. It does seem like something that the people would do, though, just as a. Like, let me try something and let me, you know, do something. And
I think that's how I would approach it.
Yeah, there certainly seem to be enough opportunities for that. Like, I'm sure they wouldn't turn, you know, people away if they wanted to work. It's just more, you know, what they better have some decent, you know, psychological staff on site.
I just need, like, a 5-terabyte hard drive. And just fill it up with movies and TV. And then the rest would all be scotch and bourbon.
Yeah, I forget what the allotment was. I think you get something like 250 pounds of whatever you want to bring. That seems like a lot.
That's a lot of weed.
So I've heard of people, you know, just growing that there. Because, I mean, why not? If you're going to power lights and stuff, and, you know, you have pretty much the purest water you could ever have, right? So, you know, hydroponics, man.
I mean, it'd be hard to send, even if you were not a pot smoker, to just to be able to say, yeah, I smoke pot at the South Pole, you'd kind of do it. Right?
It's a pretty chill spot, if you get my meaning.
You should be banished to the South Pole for saying that. Come on now.
Well, in any case, the it was a neat story. I think what was interesting was the opposite is also true, right? You know, during the summer, I guess. It's daylight all the time, but it's a lot busier because instead of it being just ridiculously cold and you can't go outside and stuff like that, it's warm enough that you can work like outside. Not that there's necessarily that much work to do other than maintaining all of the buildings. So the article made it sound like during the summer everyone is just working on the exteriors of buildings to make sure that they're, you know, winter worthy, and then building new buildings. And there's a lot more kind of activity in that and less research, I would guess. But,
well, you got to prepare your defenses for when the vampires come, because when it's dark for that long, you're screwed. If movies have taught me anything,
right. I think it turns into like the, you know, the morning person versus night person thing writ large. Right? If you want like a lot of daytime, this is a place to go. It's also a place to go in the opposite side of the year when you want a lot of nighttime. I think I am a night person generally, although I do wake up ridiculously early and am generally functional, you know, pretty quickly in the morning. So I've been told I'm a morning person, but at the same time I stay up like really, really late. So I don't know what that means.
Has anyone told you you might be a Cylon? Because I've long suspected it. I feel safe asking that question like 100 miles away.
I do get that podcast up pretty quickly. Well, in completely other news, moving from the world of Antarctica and the cold and drunkenness, kind of the, I guess it's the product of drunkenness, is some companies in Europe. Here we go with Europe again, right? They've built and successfully marketed a combination urinal and sink. And I guess the way it works is the sink part is in the upper half of it, and then, you know, the urinal part is where I guess the normal urinal part would be. So it takes up less space in a bathroom, so you can have more urinals, which, you know, I guess is a problem some places. But the other interesting thing is that the water that you use to wash your hands, I guess, is also used to flush, like, afterwards. So whatever you're doing, and it's kind of, I guess the other benefit is it saves a few steps.
You know, also, it's gross. There's a couple fatal flaws in this idea. One is splashback.
Yes.
And two is vandalism. Because all it takes is one jokester to go pee on all the handles. Which would be easy to do since it's right there. No, I would not use that.
I think I want to say
this is like a set piece from an 80s movie for like a European trip comedy. Where the guy walks into the bathroom and he does this thing and he looks at it and he's like, how do I use this thing? This is the 21st century bidet to confuse Americans.
It does seem like, you know, it's kind of a movement towards too much efficiency. I think we talked about that a little bit last week too. Again with what was it? It was making the symbol for the.
Yeah,
it's just that kind of thing. It's like you don't need to make everything fit like perfectly. I mean, go to Japan; they don't have combination toilet you know sinks. In Japan, they have combination like toilet bidets with like robots in them, but not sinks.
And vending machines where you can buy panties, I guess. I don't know sinks. If I would look to Japan as the shining beacon of sanity.
Well, I think washing your hands should be a thing, and more so as a separate action and in a separate spot than everything else.
Well, they say don't shit where you eat. You eat with your hands. That should at least be a few steps away.
Here.
Call me crazy, but maybe they're just more trusting in Europe. History doesn't seem to show that, but but maybe. I wouldn't trust that technology in America. People are evil.
Yeah, I know. I've been to some bathrooms where there's like a communal sink, and like if you look at it the wrong way, it could be a urinal. So it's that kind of thing. It's like let's keep those distinctions distinct, because there are going to be enough people that are in bathrooms and somewhat inebriated and making bad choices anyway. Why give them an opportunity to really, really mess things up
for? Or what if they're drunk and they think it's a water fountain?
Oh, God.
And try to drink. That's not good.
Yes, there's a lot of badness.
Yeah, so not a thing, okay. I say.
Moving over to a different and hopefully more palatable, or at least less disgusting kind of invention, there's a new brand of erasable pen. And when I first read this, my thought was, who uses erasable pens? I think I did in like, maybe, I think it was like third grade or fourth grade, and I was starting to write in pen, and it was the kind of thing, it's like a safety net, so I can still mess up and fix it, except like the erasable pens that I've ever had, like, don't really erase, they just kind of smudge it. So instead of having this nice clean paper of text that, you know, would be clear if it were in pencil, you get this kind of half smudge thing of ink for pens. So the advancement in this pen is they're like friction or something like that, but it's spelled with an X. I don't know. The deal is that the pen cap eraser erases by heating it up, and the heat makes the ink become transparent, which is cool. It doesn't smudge it at all. It doesn't spread it around like a traditional kind of eraser would. So kind of cool technology. Although the article had one kind of problematic thing about it. And did you catch that? Did you read the article?
I did not.
So the thing about it is that because it's using the friction of the eraser to kind of heat up the ink and then turn it clear, if you left your notes in a hot car, All of them would go away. Now, supposedly the way that it erases the way that it erases is if you're really, really trying to erase with the friction kind of eraser, it will heat it up enough that it won't be that you can't restore it. But leaving it in a hot car, it's gentle enough of an upsweep in temperature that you can actually restore your notes by putting them in the freezer. I feel like this is rife for, like, again, like that kind of movie gaffe, but instead of being for a tourism travel movie, it's a kind of spy movie, and the person writes it down and then puts it, you know, it is a freezer to get all of the words that were written down previously or something. It's like the new age equivalent of, you know, rubbing the pencil on the pad of paper to see what was written last.
Lebowski style.
I don't know if it would work exactly. The technology has some ways to go, but I think giving fourth graders a different option for their erasable pens is a thing. So, off of kind of erasable pens and into pens that are not kind of physical.
Pens?
Yes, yeah. Pens that are not pens. There is Monsters University came out last week, I guess, and one of the articles that had been going around this weekend was the unified Pixar theory, and I guess there are references in Pixar movies to other Pixar movies. There'll be like signs of places and like little toys in the background of scenes and stuff like that. And so someone pulled together a theory of how all of the movies fit together in one single long timeline. And when I say long, I mean like galactic time long. At one point is talking about how evolution has evolved the cars, you know, from machines, and it draws on, you know, some aspects which I think are questionable. But what was really interesting was I saw the article on Sunday, I think, or early Monday, and it had been edited because I guess there had been enough people that had written in and said, oh, you remember this from this movie, and don't forget that, and, you know, normally those kinds of things would be its own article or whatever, or not even be seen because internet commenters are, like, lame for the most part. But what was interesting was the author took a lot of that feedback and actually refined the theory quite a bit since the first iteration of it. So it's pretty intense. I mean, I was impressed by the amount of linking that went through. It's not 100% logical. There are a couple jumps that you have to make, but for the most part, really well done.
Yeah, I do have my own alternate theory.
Oh.
Is that the same people who made all those movies are the same people who made all those movies. And what do artists like that like to do? They like to put in Easter eggs.
Especially computer people. They're always been... I think my first encounter with the word Easter egg outside of, like, Easter eggs was a computer game where someone had left a thing where you press a couple things and, you know, it would like make the screen dance or whatever. The big one these days is kind of resurrecting the Konami code into websites.
Yes, I saw it with the Velociraptor.
Yes. Yeah, I forget what website that was. It was some, like, I want to say it was Vogue UK or some,
I think it was Vogue.
Yeah, it was some fashion company. And when you do the Konami code, a Velociraptor in a funny hat appears at the bottom of the screen and just runs across the screen. And every time you do it, they show up with a different hat. I'll have to look that up and link it in the notes. That's worth doing.
Yeah. I'll have to include the Konami code for people who don't know what that is.
Oh, come on. Everyone knows that, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yes, many a game of Contra or Life Force or Ikari Warriors or what other, is that really all the ones I can think of that had the Konami code in it? Am I dating myself quite a bit right now?
So...
So what? What else happened this weekend?
Well, there was this little indie film that came out that I really liked, which I think is probably going to lead us into spoiler territory.
Yes, yes.
This nice artistic filmmaker, really, really branching out, is Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim.
Yes. I love saying the director's name for it.
Del Toro's Pacific Rim.
It does make it a different movie altogether, I think.
But it really is. Like, it's such a his movie.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what your take on it is, but I might be my favorite movie this year so far.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I mean, it was really, really impressive. The scale of it, the amount of kind of
the detail
and world building and attention to kind of the mythology of it was great. I think there were a lot of good things about all of the monsters and where they came from and the giant robots. Just, you know, going back to I think one of my first toys when I was younger was this weird kind of knockoff Japanese robot thing that I got at a flea market. And I played with that a lot. It was this like die-cast metal robot kind of thing. And it's always been, you know, like a kind of fun escape for me to do the kind of giant robot kind of controlled by humans movements kind of thing. It's always that. I mean, you know, that was in like Robotech and a bunch of other kind of older sci-fi kind of stuff. So it was really cool to see kind of an updated thing of that for this movie. And I'm very positive about all of the effects and all of the design and everything else. I did take issue with the writing and the pacing a little bit.
I can definitely, yeah. I should clarify, this is my favorite movie I've seen this year so far. It's not a perfect movie.
No.
I mean, something's really knocking it out of the park. The visuals, the imagination, it's just so creative.
Yeah.
And it was fun to see that with the level of budget that it had.
Right, exactly.
You really could see every dollar they spent.
Yeah.
Like some movies are $150 million movies. Like, where did all that money go? But this, you could tell where the money went. And it did not go to maybe the lead actor. I mean, I like Charlie Hunnam. He's been in some decent stuff. I haven't watched Sons of Anarchy, but I've heard good things. He could have been anybody.
Exactly.
He's like Mark Hamill without it being Star Wars.
Yeah, someone told me that they essentially just took his Jax character from Sons of Anarchy and then, you know, put him in a robot.
No, but the supporting cast is great. Yeah. Charlie Day stole the freaking movie.
Yeah, pretty much every scene except the scenes where, I can't remember his name. Oh, it's killing me. No, I'm not going to remember.
Rob Perlman?
Sorry?
Peter Silva.
Yeah, where Rob Perlman is just chewing the hell out of all of the scenery.
Oh, his shoes are amazing.
Yeah, the I think some of the kind of tension building elements that were in the movie were completely unnecessary. So like, who's his drift partner gonna be? Oh, he's fighting.
We know who it's gonna be.
It's like, why did we could just said, all right, he's partnered with this person. Let's go. Let's put him in the robot. Let's go. Like I kept thinking that for a lot of the sequences. It's like, oh, his brother died, so he doesn't want to fight in robots. Oh, yes, he does. It's fine. Let's fight in robots. Let's get to the robots.
Well, one thing I did like that involved Charlie Hunnam, probably the only thing that really involved him, was his relationship with Maury.
Yes.
It was very intimate.
Sure.
Like, they had good chemistry.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't like romantic.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. Like it really seemed like they, you know, they shared each other's mind.
Sure.
Like there was a familiarity there.
Yeah, I think that was handled better than it could have been. They could have easily made it a, you know, kind of cheesy love story kind of subcurrent, and they didn't go for it. I don't know if that was because they were running out of time because they needed to show more monsters and robots, but that excuse is fine with me. I actually wish there were more scenes, especially when there were more than one Jaeger active at once. Because, I mean, it sounded like there were, at one point, a lot of them, and it sounded sort of like they're just kind of lone wolves. They don't ever work together. And you get that sense from the way that everyone kind of acts towards each other when they're not in the robots, which I also thought was kind of a silly, like, posturing thing. It's like, oh, I don't trust these guys and this robot. They should just leave. It's like, you know, if he leaves, that's one less huge-ass robot that you have to help fight, right?
I did like when he kicked the shit out of that Australian guy.
That did help, yes.
Who is on True Blood this season? So yeah. That was kind of throwing me off.
Right. With a different accent.
Right.
Everything is broken.
But I think one of my favorite scenes is when they detonate a nuke at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And it just vaporizes all the water, and you see the fish falling. Then the water comes back. Like, that was just, what?
Yeah, it took me a second to figure out what was going on. It's like, why are fish? Oh!
Yeah, no, I was smiling the whole time. I just was in awe. It was, visually, it was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see it in 3D or IMAX?
No, I saw it just regular 2D.
Yeah, me too.
At a decent theater.
I think, though, that the theater experience is really necessary for this. I mean, you really need the big screen and big sound.
Yeah, I think if you wait for home viewing, you're going to say, why is everyone so excited about this movie? It's not. It's what it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
But you get that sense of scale when you see it in the theater, as movies are intended to be viewed.
Hear, hear.
They don't shoot, especially these kind of action movies, aren't shot to be watched on your TV at home.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the same effect as if you see it in a theater.
Yeah. Although, I'm completely fine with it not being 3D, to reiterate the Not a Thing podcast's official stance on 3D. Because this was a conversion. And if I'm remembering right, Guillermo del Toro even said that it wasn't going to be in 3D.
He did. And then they changed their mind.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure someone paid for it to happen. So,
but I think I also read that they spent more time converting it than any other conversion that had been done.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. I kind of want to go see it on 3D IMAX, which maybe this weekend. I don't know. I've got so much going on, but I want to see it on that big screen.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing it in a bigger theater. The showing I went to ended up being kind of a longer theater than I'm used to. So where we sat kind of in the middle and kind of higher, but the screen ended up being a lot further away than I would have liked for the fight in Hong Kong. I think that was the major one that you wanted to see, like, big and everywhere.
Yeah, there's just I feel like this is the movie that every time I watch it, and I plan on watching it at least a couple more times. Every time I watch it, I'm going to find something else, because there's so many things, so many layers to it. Not story-wise, but just visually.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many details. It's just such a rich world.
Yeah, the amount of work they did for all of the set dressing, right? I mean, just the sequences where people are walking around. There's so many people that are involved in, you know, in all of the shots, and that's just people, right? There's all sorts of mechanical stuff going on too. So yeah, I agree. I think the you know, they engineered the hell out of every shot.
Well, they really, it was efficient, because apparently he cut an hour.
Oh my god! The movie.
So there's another hour of footage out there. So maybe someday we'll get a director's cut.
That could be interesting. I think if I wanted to see more, I mean, besides more robot and...
It was more character development stuff, I guess, that got cut out.
Huh.
Because they wanted to keep the runtime low.
Yeah.
Because it's a family movie. Anyone could go see it.
Are there any parts that are...
Like... Unless your inner child is dead, then you should go see this movie. If you don't like fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you can dismiss a lot of the kind of very predictable, let's make a speech here kind of breaks, it is really fun. It really did remind me of, like, you know, the playing with toys kind of aspect. And you could tell that's what Guillermo del Toro is doing. He's just like, I'm playing with really big toys.
Yeah, I'm playing with $190 million worth of toys. And that's what we want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So from that point of view, it was really good.
That's just wait for November and December when the Oscar movies come out, if you're looking for story and all that stuff. Well, I mean, even the story I thought was interesting. It wasn't, you know, I mean, it was original, but also structurally not original.
Yes.
If that makes any sense.
I know exactly what you mean. Right.
Same, was it like that Fast and Furious tagline, the same model, original parts?
Yeah.
Like, these were original parts. But the structure was, you know, we knew where this movie was going.
Right. Right. Maybe even before it did.
But that might have been an intentional choice on the part of the director. You don't want to be thinking too much. You want to be able to spend all your brain just soaking it all in.
Yeah. Just processing all of the...
Yeah.
Like, crazy stuff happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take it. Good stuff. Well, Brandon, I think we've squandered everyone's time enough this week.
So mission accomplished.
Yeah, we'll put this one to bed, and we'll talk to you next week.
Next week, 1 year.
Oh, my gosh. Are we doing anything special?
No. It's a surprise. It may be something really cool, or it may just be business as usual.
Yes, it's a surprise. It'll even surprise us.
Keeping it fresh.
Excellent. Talk to you soon, Brendan.
Till next time.